contract spending trends steadily downward over the past 3 years because of years of budget cuts and sequestration. Kevin Plexico is Vice President of Research at Deltek and my leadoff guest on Industry Chatter today. He's looking at whether that trend will continue and what challenges the budget might create next fiscal year. Kevin, it's great to have you back on the program. What are some of the main effects that budget challenges are having on contracting? Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you again. I think the main challenge we've seen, obviously, in the last couple of years is just the key thing being the lack of predictability, and that's forced agencies to delay a lot of spending. Obviously, during the year of the sequester, when it happened effectively midway through the year, we saw a lot of capital investments, investments in IT and investments in architecture, engineering, construction, kind of the quick ways that they could avoid spending money to make ends meet when they thought they were going to have one level of spending at the beginning of the year and then realized it was going to be something very, very different at the end of the year. And so that had obviously a huge impact on companies. Going into 2014, things improved a little bit on the civilian side, but the Defense Department continues to have some struggles as the war spending goes down, and they were hit a bit harder with the sequester than civilian agencies.
What does that look like in the out years? Because we're here and watching and listening as Congress debates what to do with the appropriations bills for this year, and I wonder if it's early enough yet, or if it's soon enough yet, I guess, to be able to tell where things are headed from some of the bills that the members are marking up and voting on right now.
Well, I think the good news for companies and for agencies is that the budget outlook for, based on the Budget Control Act caps and even the sequester caps, all the numbers go up from here. The first couple of years of the Budget Control Act, the numbers were declining, for about a three-year period of time that they carved those out, and then they started to allow 1% to 2% increases going forward. So we still have a gap between what the president's proposed. He's obviously proposed higher levels of spending underwritten by higher levels of tax increase, and you know the Republicans in the Senate and the House have proposed less spending and no tax increases. So there's a little bit of a gap, but I think the bounding is between the two levels of what was in the original caps and the sequester caps, which would be kind of the worst case scenario from my point of view.
Now, I know the agency folks are optimistic, at least very cautiously optimistic, as they hear members of Congress saying, yeah, I think that a deal like the bipartisan budget agreement a couple of years ago, negotiated by Paul Ryan and Patty Murray, would be a good model, and we should do that again. I can't find anybody in Congress who says that they think that doing it sequester style is a good idea. And those, if I recall correctly, that agreement lifted the budget caps or changed them for at least for those 2 years and then reinstituted them again starting this year. Is that something also that industry should find a little bit of cautious optimism in, that members are already starting to talk about, yes, we should do that? Or is it too early to tell that, do you think, Kevin?
Well, I do think that's kind of what the community is cautiously optimistic about, is that we'll find some agreement. We already see a little bit of seeds in that the president proposed a pretty healthy increase in the base budget for the Defense Department. But it was offset by cuts in the Overseas Contingency Operations Fund. And Congress has basically said, well, we're on board with the total number, but we want to keep the base budget within the same caps that were outlined before, and we want to put extra money in the OCO fund and then just direct you to use it to pay for the base budget activity. So it's a little bit of budget gimmickry to kind of get to the same number. And in Congress and the president seem agreed on the total dollar amount, but we'll have to see if they get to it the same way.
Yeah, and I understand and agree with the idea that it's gimmickry, but I think maybe we might have overstated the gimmickry part of it at the expense of discussing the significance that they agree on the number. I mean, that's not something that we've seen. I don't remember the last time that we saw that.
Well, in the Defense Department, there's usually not a huge amount of disagreement around the funding levels. There's always the disagreement over certain programs and certain initiatives. It might be, the pet initiatives of certain senators or congressmen, and so you get a little bit of that. But at the top level numbers, usually they're only off by 1 or 2 percentage points. I think what's notable this year was there was a uniformity around a pretty significant increase, and I think the backdrop of that is what's going on in Ukraine and ISIS and all the threats that we're facing overseas, and not to mention North Korea and China and all kinds of things going on. So So I don't think there's much appetite for continuing to cut in the Defense Department and really giving them a bit more to get some latitude to get back on track.
Kevin Plexico is Vice President of Research at Dell Tech and looking, at the effects of the budget challenges on contracting. My first guest on Industry Chatter today. You have a couple of trends here to watch, and I wonder which of those is the one or ones, two or three of them maybe, that make the most impact. You've got one slide here, and we will direct folks on how to get more information about your presentation at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But you've got you've done some work on the mix of IT spending by the type of contract vehicle. What's the significance of what you're seeing there and what it might bode for the future, Kevin?
Well, I think the key thing we're seeing is that there's a bit of a form of contract consolidation as agencies are moving to these IDIQ, you know, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts that are awarded to multiple vendors, and then they compete individual pieces of work through those contracts. And if you're a company who happens to not be on a particular contract vehicle that a particular agency is using, you can find yourself locked out of doing a lot of work in that agency for several years. So that's one of the reasons we've seen a bit more willingness by companies to file protests on some of these high risk, high reward contracts, where if they don't win a position, they're effectively locked out. So what's the cost of protesting? Could be millions of dollars lost if they don't do something to try and get a position. So I think that's one thing. The other thing is it's really changing the way companies compete. The task orders that come out under these types of vehicles have rather quick response times. It's one of the areas where you see government buying quickly. They'll turn around an SOW and expect companies to respond to that SOW within 10, 14, 20 days, and it can be a multi-million dollar response. So pretty challenging turnaround time for a company that's got to go formulate a team, develop win themes and a strategy for how they're going to go after it, write a proposal that really delivers and has a well-thought-out solution that can compete when they might not have even known about the opportunity before the SOW came out. You compare that to what it was like when it was a long 18, 24-month procurement, you had plenty of time to think through those types of things. So I think that's really challenged companies in terms of how their business development operations are conducted.
It certainly means that folks have to have pieces in place a lot faster than they ever have before, or maybe even have them in place just because kind of on spec on what work might possibly involve, so that you know when something comes down the pike where you have to push buttons.
Yeah, I think they tend to think more about what are the solutions that we can really respond to and how do we line up our templates and our teammates and our solution approach so that we can respond more quickly. And we know that if it's that type of deal, we're just going to bid. So I think there's been a lot of things that companies have done to try to make themselves more efficient and agile when it comes to that kind of proposal process.
You have a comparison here for some of the socioeconomic goals that the government's worked toward. They have finally hit 23% in fiscal 14 in small business goals. They're doing okay with SDBs, small disadvantaged businesses, and have for a while. They're doing okayer with women-owned businesses. They've hit 3% for the last several years. They're still working toward the mark for service-disabled veterans and hub zones. It looks like they're not even close and appear to be going the wrong direction on hub zones.
Yeah, the hub zone program is a really challenging program to comply with. It's also the program that has the fewest vendors in it. If you think about it, the other ones are all about the ownership of the business, and the hub zone is about the location of the employees and the location of the business. And what happens is you get a hub zone set up, you start winning contracts, and you start doing well, and the employees are doing well, and then they start moving out of the hub zone too because they want to move to areas that are more desirable. So I think that program has some unique challenges and probably needs to be rethought in terms of really what it's trying to accomplish. But in general, agencies are doing better in aggregate. They've actually achieved the 23% wide go just barely in 2013, which was the first time, I think, in 7 or 8 years. And they improved again in 14. But it's interesting because if you think about that issue, where they're spending more money, but they're also consolidating contracts, what we've seen is the participation rates on the contracts has gone down with small business contracting. So the typical small business that's winning these prime contracts is getting larger contracts, but there's fewer of them that are winning those prime contract positions. And I think that's an interesting challenge that SBA is going to have to grapple with. Are they looking for just pure dollar amounts, or are they looking for participation rates in terms of numbers of companies that they're helping?
You're writing about a number of issues to watch here, and a lot of them are things that we've touched on already: the budget and appropriations process, sequestration if it doesn't go away, schedule changes at GSA, defense acquisition reform, some geopolitical issues. You have a couple under regulatory issues: small business rule changes and FAR changes. Do we have a sense of what those changes might be, or at least what areas those changes might be in relative to the policies towards small businesses and what's in the FAR?
Yeah, there's been a host of rule changes that have been put forward by the Small Business Administration, and there's some more that are kind of in the rulemaking process now. A lot of them are focused around increasing the accountability of prime contractors to live up to their small business commitments. So putting a bit more teeth in requiring them to notify the contract officer if they're paying their subcontractors late. Or if they aren't using the subcontractors they committed to in the proposal, when they subsequently start to do the work, you know, requiring the prime contractor to be transparent about that with the contracting officer. So putting a bit more teeth in some of the and accountability in some of the prime contractors that, you know, maybe have had a reputation for you know, showing up at the dance with the small business and then leaving with somebody else. Some of the other ones are putting a bit more teeth into the accountability of the small business to report their status correctly and make sure that they're not doing anything in terms of misreporting their status, as we've had, you know, examples in the past of companies that have kind of misreported their status and benefited from that misreporting. You know, trying to get that out of the system by raising the stakes with some criminal charges and civil penalties that could really put some teeth into that. So that's some of the things we've seen, and then also some reforms to the Mentor Protege program that would expand that, because currently it's only limited in the SBA for a limited set of companies, really in the 8A companies, and they're looking to expand it to other types of small businesses to make it more available.
Excellent insight as always, Kevin. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.